Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Insights from Sightless Friendly Church. I am Lynn Davis, and coming up today, we are going to be doing something a little bit different from our usual format. At the end of June, my colleagues, Becky Davis and Matthew Horspall, who usually presents this show with me, went to the Methodist Conference in Telford, where Becky interviewed Matthew about growing up blind and Christian. Today we are going to be hearing part one of this interview, and I'll be handing over now to Becky and Matthew.
So my name's Becky Davis, and I'm part of the Sight Loss Friendly Church team at Torch Trust, and I'm here with my colleague Matthew, Matthew Horspall, who's also on the Sight Loss Friendly Church team as well. So we're sort of here today as part of Torch, and we are exhibiting as well upstairs. But we're here today. I'm just going to interview Matthew, really, talk a bit about himself. And there'll be opportunity for you to ask questions as well. So, Matthew, I guess the first thing is, have you always been blind?
Well, yes. Hello, everyone. Yes, I've always been blind. I was born blind. We play videos a lot in Torch, and one of the videos is about the sight loss spectrum, and they say that 93% of us can see something. I always find that quite amusing because I'm part of the 7% then who can't see anything. You'll see I've got my eyes closed. That's pretty normal. I used to get told when I was a child a lot that, you know, I why am I asleep and I should wake up and I should concentrate more in school, when actually I was concentrating perfectly well. It's just because my eyes are closed. They don't work. I can't see anything out of them. I've always been blind. I think it's very difficult to say whether that's the best way. It's certainly very different if you lose your sight later on in life. If you lose your sight later on in life, then you've got all of that visual memory that you can sort of, you know, rely on, and you can, you know, think back to how things looked when you were younger and things. I don't have any of that visual memory, but I suppose the advantage of that is that I was able to learn how to do things as a blind person from day one. And I think in working life, that's been a very useful thing to have.
Thank you, Matthew. And one thing I remember asking you when we first met, which was something that was because you obviously don't have that visual memory. I was thinking, well, how do you dream? So for me, that's really interesting. So Matthew, how do you dream?
It's funny. It's interesting to so many people that I've never understood why. But yes, I can imagine, but I can't imagine visually because I've not had that visual memory. So, you know, dreams are not just visual. You can hear things in your dreams, and you can smell things in your dreams, and you know, you can feel things. So all of those things still apply. I just don't have sight in my dreams in the same way as I don't have sight, you know, when I'm awake.
So what was your experiences growing up as a child who was blind? How was that?
Yes, so they didn't realise I was blind for a while. My mum sort of realised that my eyes weren't quite right, and she took me to the doctor, and the doctor said, no, all children's eyes are small. And she said, no, yeah, but Matthew's eyes are really small. There's something quite wrong here. And eventually I was diagnosed. They went through a stage of thinking I was deaf because I wasn't looking at people, and they thought that I wasn't looking at people because I couldn't hear them. It turned out it was because I couldn't see them. So I was diagnosed probably about 6 months after I was born. And once we had a diagnosis, I suppose my parents could start to do things, and they started to investigate, you know, what would it be possible for me to do? And that led them to blind school. So I went to a school for the blind right the way from nursery. I went to a nursery for the blind. I was very fortunate living in Birmingham. Birmingham LEA, Local Education Authority, actually maintained a school for the blind in the catchment area. So I went to Priestley Smith School for nursery and carried on there right the way through primary school. And then it moved campus, but it was still in Birmingham. So I went to Priestley Smith Secondary and all the way through went to blind school. And that was, I think, really useful academically, because it meant that I had access to all of the resources that I needed, you know, and I learned Braille while everybody else was learning handwriting. And it felt normal to learn Braille because I was in a blind school. So, you know, everybody was, well, not everybody. Some people were partially sighted and were learning to handwrite, but a lot of people were learning Braille at the school. And you know, all of this stuff. I learned Braille. I learned how to touch type because it was felt that if I could touch type, then I would be able to write in print. And goodness, how useful that's become with technology and stuff. And I learned how to use a white cane. And all of this stuff was just built into the curriculum as normal. This is what you do. In class sizes that were very, very small, I mean, my Braille was taught one-to-one. My long cane skills were taught one-to-one. A lot of my lessons were taught in classes of maybe three or four. A class of six was a big class. So, you know, academically, it was brilliant. It was like going to private school. The only problem was, in a class size that small, it was really hard to find anybody with any sort of interest that was similar. I mean, it's hard enough in a class of 30. You know, you end up with several friendship groups that spring out of a class of 30, and they've each got sort of five or six people in. Well, yeah, but I mean, there's only five or six people in the whole class. And so socially, it was actually quite awkward. And I sort of felt like I didn't have any friends growing up, really, largely because, I didn't have any friends growing up. But there weren't anybody with similar interests. And the people who did have similar interests were maybe 3 or 4 years younger or 3 or 4 years older. And that doesn't make much of a difference when you're an adult. But when you're sort of 10 and the person who's or 11 and the person who's got your interest is maybe 15 or 16, that feels like a huge age gap. You know, it's insurmountable. You don't hang around in the playground with people who are that much older and that much younger.
So that was school life. And so you said you went to blind school from nursery. So what happened beyond school?
Beyond school, I went to a college for the blind, which was a lot of fun, actually. When you get to 16, you either carry on at school and do A-levels. Well, at that point, Priestley Smith didn't have an A-level option, so I had to go somewhere. And I could have tried out mainstream college, but because I hadn't had the social experience of you know, childhood, I didn't feel ready for mainstream college. I knew by that point that there was a lot that I'd missed out on, but I didn't quite know how to get it back, if you see what I mean. So I was looking at blind colleges, you know, colleges for the blind, and two sprung to mind. There was the New College, Worcester, which was a school, but it had a sixth form unit, and there was the Royal National College down in Hereford. And it was well established that if you wanted academic qualifications, you went to Worcester, you didn't go to Hereford. And I decided that whilst that was true, what I needed at that point was all of the soft skills that I hadn't learnt in school. I needed social skills. I needed independent skills. You know, for all that I was academically capable, I still couldn't make a cup of tea at 16, let alone operate the cooker. And so I made a decision to go to Hereford. And if I went to Hereford and really didn't get on very well academically, I would at least come out of Hereford with the skills to be able to go and study at a mainstream college, you know, as an adult learner, if you like. So I went to Hereford and quickly realized that the people who went to Hereford were the people that didn't go to Worcester. So I ended up going to Hereford with, even though it was a blind school, with a lot of people who'd been to mainstream and it hadn't worked for whatever reason. So actually, they had got the social skills of being in mainstream because they'd been to mainstream before. They just, you know, they needed help academically. So I was able to learn from them a lot, and I was able to learn from the college a lot about, you know, how to operate a washing machine. Of course, every washing machine's different, but they were at least able to tell me what the settings on the washing machine to look for would be, and strategies for when you get your own washing machine at home, how to mark it up. So, you know, put a dot on the dial at a certain point so you know where you're supposed to be. And so they did that. They taught me how to use the cooker. One of the most interesting things I learned out of Hereford, and I stick by to this day, is that gas cooking on gas is much easier and much safer for a blind person than cooking on an electric hob. Because if you cook on electric, it takes a long time for it to heat up and it takes a long time for it to cool down. So you might look at the switch on the hob and think that it's turned off and touch it and it's still boiling hot and you wouldn't know. Whereas at least on the gas, all right, there's a flame there, but as soon as you turn the gas off, it's off. And you can hear when the gas is on, it makes a noise. And so that was a particularly interesting thing that I learned out of Hereford. And I did my A-levels as well. And as it happened, did reasonably well in my A-levels. I think I would have done slightly better had I gone to Worcester, but not by orders of magnitude, you know. So I did my A-levels and did well enough to get into university. And so, yes, I went to Coventry University, studied computer science, That was an interesting experience for all sorts of reasons. I didn't particularly enjoy the course, and I realized very quickly that I probably didn't want to go into proper computer science as a career. I just didn't know where I did want to end up. So I went full circle. There was a school for the blind in Coventry that had a position open for a Braille transcriber. And I thought, well, while I'm deciding what I want to do, I'll go and work at Exel Grange for a bit. And I've sort of stayed in the sector ever since, really.
So just going back to childhood, we sort of heard about school and that kind of thing. Were you involved in a church at that point? And if you were, what was that kind of experience like?
Yeah, so my family were the type of family that would always say that they were Christian on a census. They went to church. They probably couldn't articulate why they went to church other than their parents went to church and told them it was a good idea. But it did mean that I had a good grounding in church. You know, we used to go to church most weeks. I was baptized into the Church of England. This would have been in the 90s, early 2000s. So fresh expressions were kind of coming into the Church of England, but slowly. And so I was very lucky in that I went to a church that didn't introduce any fresh expressions at all. It was a very, you know, straight down the middle of the road. We follow the order of service and it's the same service every week. You just have different hymns. And so with the help of a Braille hymn book, I was actually able to follow the service quite easily because I just, you know, memorized it all. And that was very easy to do. They had what they called young church, which was, I suppose, the equivalent of Sunday school. And I did try Sunday school for a bit, and I found it really, really difficult. I didn't really know, I suppose, how to manage in those sorts of situations. I mean, you think you know everything when you're a child, but I mean, I didn't. There was such a lot that I didn't know. And it wasn't very well prepared. You know, you'd turn up and there'd be an activity which would involve running around. Well, okay, well, that means that my dad's got to run around with me, which is fine, but it's not fine when everybody else's parents have gone into the service and, you know, your dad's hanging around because you need help. And then they'd do a paper-based exercise like a worksheet or a colouring in or something like that. Well, I can't colour in. And if it was a worksheet, it wasn't prepared far enough in advance for it to be done in Braille. So again, it was, you know, my dad reading it out loud and I'm having to write down my answers and, you know, I'm having to dictate my answers to my dad to write them down. So I gave up on young church very quickly and just ended up back in, you know, in the main service and actually got more out of the main service, I think, than perhaps I should have done and definitely got more out of it, you know, than Sunday school.
Thank you, Matthew. It's really interesting actually to hear from somebody's perspective who's grown up in the kind of Sunday school and that kind of thing and how you found it. So you grew up in church, but then was there a point when faith became important to you personally?
Yes, so one of the things I haven't touched on yet is music, which has been a huge part of my life. I think I've tapped on things ever since I can remember, you know, to form rhythms, and I enjoy singing and I enjoy playing instruments and things like that. When it became apparent that I was going to be staying in the adult service, as it were, I started to get a bit restless and think, yes, well, I'd like to do something in this service. And the opportunity to do something came in the form of joining the choir, which I did very excitedly. And I got a set of Braille hymn books so I could join in with the hymns. And I started to Braille out, you know, the anthems and the psalms and things so I could join in with those as well. And that then brought me a lot closer to the church because I was having to go into choir practice. So I was in church twice a week. There was a lot of learning about the faith that happened just through singing, because there'd be a passage that I would sing that I wouldn't understand. And I would say, yes, what does that mean? And then of course somebody would have to explain that number one, it's a metaphor. And number two, this is what we think the metaphor means, but someone else might think it means something completely different. And I get exposed to all these different viewpoints about what this meant, you know. And I also, because I was in the choir, was expected to go to church every week because I was expected to sing, you know, on the Sunday morning, but was also expected to go to all the special services like Ash Wednesday and Maundy Thursday and the service that they do in November for the commemoration of the faithful departed and, you know, all of these services, which I think the family wouldn't normally have gone to. And I think it was those services really that really sort of made me think, yes, this faith actually means something. I was particularly struck by the commemoration of the Faithful Departed service, I'd never been in a church where they'd read out a list of people who died before, and it was quite an experience. I you know, it wasn't a pleasant experience, but it was an interesting experience and made me think about faith in a different way. And then Maundy Thursday was a particularly powerful service when they stripped the altar. That really had an impact the first year that they did that. I thought, yes, there's something interesting going on here, and I'd like to find out more about it. And so, yes, I sort of started to find out more about it, and I think probably took ownership of my faith. I think probably in my last year of primary school was when I made the decision that actually, yes, this was a faith that I believed in. I wasn't just there because the family told me to be there.
So what happened beyond university life and jobs? I know you talked about your first job, yes, what's happened sort of since then, really? And are you still in Coventry?
I'm still in Coventry. Yes, I'm still in Coventry. I'm quite well known to all the local churches in Coventry through one thing and another. But yeah, what happened? I mean, I left Exhall Grange to come and work for Torch, and I'm still here. I think if we go back even further than that, if we go back to when I was at Hereford, was the first time that I'd left home and the first time I'd really had to think on my feet. And so I went to a church in Hereford and they said, "What do you need?" And I sort of went, "Well, to be honest, I don't really know, because I've never had to think about it like that before." And so Hereford taught me a lot about what I actually needed. It turns out what I need is a copy of the service book and, you know, I need to know what hymns you're doing. And that's, you know, the bare minimum that I need in order to get by. Oh, and preferably in Braille, or if you can't do that, then email it to me and I'll Braille it up. But Hereford taught me a lot. And so I went to Coventry with all of this knowledge. And so while I was at Coventry University, there was a church that needed an organist. And so I needed some money because I was a student. So I said, "Yes, all right, I'll do that for you." So I played the organ there for about 3 years. Then got back into singing. I took a break from singing while I was in Hereford because my voice was breaking, or my voice had already broken, and I wasn't very happy with where it had set. I mean, I'm all right with it now, but at the time, I was just upset that I couldn't sing the descants. So, you know, there was all that to get over. But I went to a church in Coventry where they had a choir, and so I joined that choir. And then from there, one of the people in that choir also sang in the chamber choir at Coventry Cathedral. So I got introduced to the cathedral's music department, who said, "You've got a good voice and we'd love to have you, but we're not sure that you'd ever pass a sight reading test." And I said, "Well, no, I probably wouldn't. You're right. But, you know, give me a try anyway." So I tried out for the chamber choir and I got in, which basically meant that about 6 Sundays a year, I would be able to sing in the cathedral. And that was just a wonderful experience. And so I enjoyed that experience a lot, and a few years on from that, a vacancy came up to sing in the main cathedral choir. So that's every Sunday in term time, you're singing in the cathedral, and some midweek services as well. And, well, I just had to go for it, really. It just seemed like such a wonderful opportunity. And so I joined what are called the clerks of the cathedral. The front row of the cathedral choir are boys or girls or a mixture of both, and they sing the soprano part, and the clerks sing the alto, tenor and bass part. So I joined the clerks of the cathedral, and I'm still happily there. We've just got through City of Culture, and we've just got through the cathedral's Diamond Jubilee, which is very confusing because it lines up nicely with the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. So I've been talking about the Diamond Jubilee and everyone's telling me I'm 10 years early, and then they realize what I'm talking about. But got through all of that, and it's just a fantastic experience, really. And to be able to merge those sorts of, you know, to be able to have a working life in the day and then to be able to go off to the cathedral and sing at night, I don't think I'd want anything more, really.
So, Matthew, thinking about, we obviously are on the Sight Loss Friendly Church team at Torch. So your experiences of church have generally been good, I think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was a bit difficult. Like I said, I think my worst experience of church was Sunday school by far. Nobody really knew how to cope with me. I didn't know how to cope. You know, my dad didn't really know. I mean, he sort of knew that it should be available in Braille, but he didn't know where to go to get that Braille. And anyway, it wasn't prepared with enough time to get it sorted out anyway. So that was definitely my worst experience of church. But yes, I mean, apart from that, you know, you turn up and you say what you need, and most churches will accommodate that. They might sort of look at you a bit blankly as if to say, are you sure that's all you need? And there are things that you forget until you actually need them, you know. When you're going up for communion, I might need somebody to show me where the communion rail is. And that's something that you don't think about until it's time for communion and you suddenly realize, oh dear, how am I going to get up there then? So, you know, there's always a bit of experimentation that goes on the first few times you go to a new church. But yes, I mean, you know, people generally are nice unless you give them a reason not to be. And I try not to give them a reason not to be.
And that was part one of Becky Davis in conversation with Matthew Horspool at the Telford Methodist Conference. Next week, we'll be bringing you part two, which features questions and answers from the audience. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you may do so by phoning 01 858 438 260 or email us at slfc@torchtrust.org. SLFC, of course, standing for Sight Loss Friendly Church. From me, Lynn Davies, and the rest of the SLFC team, goodbye and see you next week.